Hello. Chapter 2, Sets and Functions. You have heard it before, so I will keep it short. Sets, that's a collection of unordered objects, elements, we say. And the person who really created this field was Georg Cantor in the late 19th century. Come to the end of some of his ideas. And at least the sets we are mostly concerned with in this course, the natural numbers, 0, 1, 2, 3, the integers, then we extend to the negative side, z plus, that's the positive integers, rational numbers, every pair PQ, divided, both are integers, but of course then we have to keep a Q away from zero. And we have also the real numbers. We don't say so much about this in this course, since this is discrete mathematics. Two sets are equal, A equal to B, if and only if for all X, such that X belongs to A implies that X belongs to B, and vice versa. Venn diagrams are very useful when we are considering sets, and later on we will do combinatorics, and then it's very useful for the mind to have such diagrams, help you think about the problem. And we have some universal set or universe. Here I take the we call U, positive integers, small way equal to 100, and I just do it symbolically here, and divide this set in two parts. B is called the odd integers, A the even integers, and then there are other subsets, I call it C, and take the odd integers that are multiple of 5, 15, 25, and so on. And we have some notations here, and I'll list them there to the right. B is a subset of the universe, right? A is a subset of U. A and B are disjoint, that means they have no element in common. That means that the intersection of A and B is the empty set. That's Danish Ø-like symbol. And yeah, C is also a subset of B, that's right. What do you say about the intersection of C and B? That's the elements that are both in C and B. Well, that must be C itself. A in the union, form the union, so it's of A and B, so it's the union of the even integers and the odd integers. And that must be our universe, that universal set, positive integers, small or equal to 100, we considered here. So it's important to tell which is the universal set I'm working with. Okay, let's turn page 2. And here is a set that sometimes appear that could, I mention it here, the power set, P or S of a set S. is the set of all subsets to S. And I take an example, the set of 0 and 1. What kind of subsets do we have? Well, we have always the empty set, and then I can pick 0 element, I can pick 1 element, I can pick 0, and I can pick 1, and I can pick both. So this power set has 4 elements. So the elements are sets there. And we had S had 2 elements, and PS, the power set, has 2 to the power of 2 squared, 4 elements. Note these bars here that denotes the number of elements in the set. So if our set had 3 elements, then our power set will have 2 cubed equal to 8 elements. If it has 4s has 4 elements, then the power set has 16 elements, and so on. Something that is important, and you are used to it, is Cartesian product. We have two sets, A and B, and we form the Cartesian product. Cartesian after Cartesius, Descartes, French philosopher and mathematician in the 17th century. They are all pairs, A, B. A belongs to capital A, and B, element B, belongs to set B, and you are used to it from X, the coordinate plane X, Y, then you are really working on the Cartesian product of R, the real numbers, times the real numbers. We call it R squared. And I have some figure there again, disjoint sets, A and B, yes, we have said it before. And we have the complement, the universal set minus A. That's all elements that belongs to you, but not in A. And we will see later on, we will work with intersections of three sets. And then we have the in A intersects with B, that intersects with C. And there are some elements there. In the shaded part there. Next page, page 3. In chapter 8 we will spend a lot of time with relations. Relations on sets, and the special case of a relation is a function you are used to. We have some sets A and B, and there is a rule that sends an element from A to an element a in set A and to an element B in the other set. F of A equal to B. And if I take a parabola-like figure there to the right there, you see that this is not a function, a y of x, because there are two y for each x, the positive x. But if you turn your head 90 degrees and look upon it, you see it's a function x of y. And there are some words. You can say that f is 1 to 1. What's the meaning of that? Well, it's one to one. If and only if FA equal to FB implies that A is equal to B. And F is onto. The meaning of this, and here comes the symbols from chapter one. For all the B, there is an A such that F of A is equal to B. Every element in set B is the image of some element in A. Then we say that F is onto. Take an example here. We go from a function from the positive integers to the positive integers. And we take the power function 2 to the power of n. F is 1 to 1. Can you prove it? Use the rules for powers. Is F is 1 to 1, but not onto. Certainly not, because I'll say the range of F, that means the values F can take, is here 2, 4, 8, 16. You can, in B you have, for instance, 9, but you cannot get 9 if you take 2 to the power of an integer. Two functions that are in discrete mathematics that are useful, also if you are doing programming in computer languages and so on, is the floor function. Gives the largest integer smaller or equal to x, and x could be a real number here. So largest integer smaller or equal to x. So what's the floor function of minus pi, which is the largest integer that is smaller or equal to x? Well, then you should go to the left on the real line, and then you go to an integer, and I think that must be minus 4. The ceiling function gives the smallest integer greater or equal to x. Then you should go to the right on the real. And square root of 3, that's around 1.7 something. And if you go to the right, you hit 2. So, and that's the smallest integer greater than square root of, greater or equal to square root of 3. So that should be 2 then. I take some example from the book also, and where because you can look with functions. I mean, the A set there can be a Cartesian product, Z times Z, here in this example, and this this pair produce a real an integer. So we are going from Z square to Z. And now comes the question, is first in A, F M comma N is equal to 2M minus N. Is this an onto function? Yeah. I have drawn there the points, the line here where f is equal to minus 1, it goes through the point 0, 1, because if you put in m equal to 0 and n equal to 1, we get minus 1. Can we for each integer find the pair m n such that the image of it will be this integer? Yes, that's we can put m equal to 0 and put in n equal to any integer and we will produce the integers. So that's an onto function. I turn page, last page on this lecture, page 4. And there is now we take the same problem here about another function f m comma n equal to m squared minus n squared. And is this an onto function also? I use the conjugate rule there to write it like this. And if you have a suspicion that this is not an onto function, maybe you should start with some of the lowest there. Can we produce 1? Yes, that's possible. We can put m equal to 1 and n equal to 0. What about 2? Can 2 be written as a difference between two squares? Two is equal to 2 times 1. So that means that m minus 1 should be 1 and m plus 1, m plus n should be 2. Try to see if this is possible. Maybe you can go on and say for which integers can be written as a difference between two squares and which can not be written in such a way. Okay, we say something about section 2.4 also. That's about sequences. Geometric progression. You know, interest rates, and if you put in money in the bank and such things, that can this can be useful. You have start with some a, and then you have say 3% interest rate, then you have a times 1.03 money after 1 year, and then this bit squared and cubed and so on later on. So that's called a geometric progression. We have also arithmetic progression. Then you don't multiply, you start with you add something, d2d3d, etc. For instance, the prime, the odd numbers of two types, they can be written as 4, we can start with 1 and add a multiple of 4, or we can start with 3 and add a multiple of 4. And the prime numbers can be of both these types, and it's in fact it's proven that there are infinitely many primes of both forms, 4k plus 3 or 4k plus 1. So that's arithmetic, an example of arithmetic progression. You can sum these sequences. You are used to this Greek S, and we sum them And the first example there is, if you take there are two cakes, first person take a whole cake, next person take half of the second, and then half of it, and half of it, and half of it, and 101 persons do this. How much have been taken? Well, there is a formula that you maybe know for geometric series like this summation, and it turns out that this will be 2 times a number that is very close to 1, in fact, and there are almost 2 cakes eaten up. And if we sum the integers from 1 to 100, for instance, next example, and there are many ways to prove how to do to this, it turns out that it is the geometrical mean of the first and the last term. That means 100 plus 1 divided by 2, that's 101 divided by 2, times the number of terms, that's 100, and that turns out to be 5050. If you want, you can check the book if you want the proof, but you can also try yourself, write it in the opposite order. S is equal to 1 plus 2 plus 3 and plus 4 and up to 100, but rewrite it as S is equal to 100 plus 99 plus 98 plus 97, and add these two. Then you get 2S, and you always get it up terms that are 101. 100 terms that are equal to 101. Okay, let's finish with something that is from this Georg Cantor. Two sets have the same cardinality, they say, if and only if there is a bijection from A to B. What have you said about bijection? Well, then it's 1-to-1 and on 2. There's a 1-to-1 correspondence between the elements. Then they have the same cardinality. Countable sets have the same cardinality as the positive integers. There is a first, there is a second, there is a third, there is a fourth, and so on. There is a 1-to-1 correspondence between the positive integers and these elements in the set. And maybe quite surprising if you think in this way, that the rational numbers, they are this is a countable set, because with a clever construction. Check the book for the details there. You can get an order. You can put them into 1-to-1 correspondence between in 1-to-1 correspondence between with the positive integers. 1, 1/2, 2. You go along the diagonals. You can check the book there. 3, 1/3, 1/4, and when you come to 2 divided by 4, that's the same as 1/2. You skip it. Quite a clever construction. So the rational numbers are countable. Can we other sets that are not countable? Well, the real numbers are not countable. Not even the decimals between 0 and 1, using only the digits 6 and 7 are countable. Think of it. Think that you come up with a list. You say, here I have a list of all real numbers using these two digits. The first element is 0.66666. Second element is 0.67666, and so on. And third element. It's an infinite list, but there you claim that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the interpositive integers and these decimals. The first is this, the second is this, and so on. But now it turns out, a clever argument, that it's always possible to construct an decimal number that is not in the list. Because if the first one has a 6 in the first position, well, then I put in a 7 there. And then I go on to the second position there. If it's a 7, like in this case, I put a 6. I flip. And the third element in the list, if it has a 6 in the third position, I flip it to a 7. And so on. So then I can claim that 0.767 and so on is not in the list. It's not the first element, because it's a 7 there in the first position. It's not in the second element. It's not the second element, because it's a 6 there in second position, and so on. Well, it's easy to get headache when you start to think of such questions, and we will not need it later on, these things, but these are some thoughts about sets. Okay, bye.